You're listening to Toronto's number one real estate podcast, powered by Watson Estates. The most successful local real estate investing starts right here, right now. Here's your host, broker, investor, and social media influencer, Bradley Watson.
Good morning, investors. Bradley here from Watson Estates, and you're listening to the largest, fastest growing podcast for Toronto real estate on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Will Canada pop the housing bubble like we see other central banks doing around the world? What signs do we have that a potential shift is already underway? And is the work from home trend way overplayed? These are some of the things we're going to talk about today. I hope you guys had a fantastic weekend, beautiful weather. And of course, we had daylight savings time. I don't know what you guys think about daylight savings time, but I didn't lose any sleep over it. We like to have some fun in the show. If I can't joke around and be silly, what the heck's the point? But I find it amazing. I mean, when I'm walking around, all these auto update settings on clocks now, you just getting up, and I'm thinking I got to change the clocks, but I'm walking around just thinking, wow, times have changed. Please hit the subscribe button, like this video if you want to keep up to date, and also if you want to protest keeping daylight savings times as is. Let's stop changing. It makes it really challenging, actually, with kids, all this kind of moving around. But today, we're going to talk about the housing bubble. I don't like throwing that word around, but I'm getting more and more comfortable with it these days. Will Canada pop the housing bubble like other central banks? We're going to start with a Better Dwelling article. Bank of Canada wants a housing bubble while other central banks try to pop them. Here's what they say. Central banks are flooding economies with cheap credit and trying to prevent bubbles. Well, some countries are trying to prevent bubbles. Canada has decided home price inflation is an uncontrollable consequence of the environment. In fact, the country's central bank welcomed the rapid home price growth as, quote, needed. We need it. And so there's a lot of eyes right now in the central bank in Canada. And I also today want to talk about what some of the other central banks are doing. They say if home prices are rising with an economic boom, it's good news. But if home prices rise during economic unemployment and low GDP growth, you have a big problem. This removes spending from the economy, right? All this cheap money, we're throwing it out there. But if you're just going to throw it into housing, it makes it harder to recover and it slows the growth. Countries like Canada have opted to embrace short-term gains for long-term risk. Other countries aren't so keen on seeing that happen. So this article goes on to talk about what other countries are doing. I'm going to share a few examples with you, starting with France. They have recently applied a vacancy tax that's going to kind of become official by the summer or required by the summer. But here's what they're doing. The Banque de France is limiting mortgages to 25 years and banning exceptions to anything above 35% debt service ratio. They're keeping a cap on your debt service. Lenders have also been asked to limit total debt, including insurance, to 33%. South Korea, what are they doing? Mortgages in the country's hottest markets will be subject to new caps. Mortgages over, and the number here is in US 1.3 million, just think hypothetically in Canada, 1.3 million, let's say, will be banned in regions labeled speculative or overheating. So you're not allowed getting a mortgage. 1.3 million, that's it. No more mortgage for you. Sellers of home purchase as well, purchased less than a year before, will be hit with a 70% capital gains rate. The rate is reduced to 60% after that, before 2 years. And then the basic capital gains rate was also 30 points added on top of that. So they're boosting or making it harder for you as far as speculating goes. You're trying to really target those investors. Listen to this, another way they're doing it. Multiple property holders will also be subject to a hefty additional property tax. Secondary properties will have to pay an additional property tax of up to 6% of the assessed value. None of these, by the way, are recommendations of what we should be doing here in Canada, but I think it's important we notice we're not doing anything. And we're watching countries around the world doing anything to prevent housing bubbles. We see in New Zealand, which we've talked about in recent podcasts as well, the RBNZ, which is their central bank, has asked for more tools. One of the most interesting is the use of debt-to-income ratios, which be used to limit leverage. Very similar to what we heard in France. The new rules, quote, will apply only to investors. Only to investors. Well, then that won't hurt everybody. I just heard the investors. And I know a lot of you listening to the show, if you're like me, you love investing in real estate. So these are things, if you're in that space, you need to be paying attention to. But what about Canada? Listen to what, this is what they got to say. The Bank of Canada governor when asked about taming home prices, said, and they acknowledged we have a bit of a challenge right now with home prices. They said, quote, we need the growth. There you go. There you have it. Rapid price growth is, quote, needed. Well, yeah, we're all losing our shirts out here. A friend of mine lost his job this week at a clock factory after all the extra hours he put in. Ugh. This is awesome. If I ever run out of dad jokes, I've got daylight savings time puns to fall back on. Moving on. BNM Bloomberg. Bank of Canada on guard as Bay Street warns of housing bubble. Dun, dun, dun. The Bank of Canada is holding, by the way, this is an update from this week, its overnight lending rate unchanged at 0.25%. The central bank says it will keep rates on hold until its inflation objectives is substantially achieved. David Rosenberg, who is making a lot of headlines right now, chief economist and strategist at Rosenberg Research, provides his reaction. He doesn't see rates moving for years, even beyond 2023. He also says that Canada might be in one of the biggest housing bubbles of all time. So rates aren't going to change, yet we're in a housing bubble. But if, in fact, as we see later, rates do change, we have ourselves a problem. We've got ourselves in a little bit of a pickle. Quote, this might be one of the biggest bubbles of all time, he told BNN Bloomberg. Of course, it's being predicated on where mortgage rates are. I don't like to be doom and gloom, but I like to be aware of what's going on. And I think it's important for us as investors to at least kind of have our finger on the pulse on everything going on in the local market. Here's another article. Canadian real estate is, quote, playing with fire, approaching classic bubble. This is according to BMO senior economist Robert Kavcic. Here's the thing. When we start having different financial institutions kind of hinting at possible risks, even if they never happen, there is a psychological turn that can take place in our market, which I believe we're already maybe seeing, and we're gonna discuss that a little bit more in our podcast soon. But looking at the percent of income needed to carry a mortgage on homes, he doesn't think 2017 was a bubble. The current situation is rapidly turning into one, though. So if you thought 2017 was a bubble, not according to this dude, what we're facing today looks far more in line with what could become a serious bubble. If mortgage rates rise, see the opposite, or stay the same and prices rise at the current pace, the market hits classic bubble level. So let me get this straight. We don't get interest rates rising for a long time. We got ourselves a problem. We're in a bubble. If we increase interest rates, we're in a problem. We got ourselves a bubble. And if they stay the same and prices rise, we're in a bubble. Not looking so good. I mean, we got doom on every angle. What do we do? What do we do? We're going to talk about what comes next. But Kavcic called the explosive price movement in 2016, 2017, a, quote, mini bubble. That was a mini one. It was limited to some segments and locations, and actually we were able to correct it after 4 years of recovery, which is great based on all the policymakers and the things that they added. But when you look at the chart, you realize when it comes to payment percentage of income on average price home. So pretty much how much does your house cost relative to the income? We're well beyond 2017. In fact, it's looking a lot more like the 90s when we faced what they call a classic bubble. Low interest rates motivated sales activity, but also created a debt trap. The cheap carrying costs are making it easy to load up on high debt levels. However, if mortgage rates go back to pre-pandemic levels, we're back into late 1980s territory by this valuation metric, notes The Economist. So we got to be very careful. We don't jack those rates up overnight. Well, then maybe we just leave them. Can we just leave them low? Here's what they say to that. Leaving mortgage rates where they are sounds like the obvious solution, but that won't work either. Quote, if mortgage rates stay where they are, but prices keep doing what they're doing, which if you just check what the real estate boards suggest is going to be the case, we're back into the late 1980s territory by this time next year. We're kind of doomed both ways, which makes you wonder who's going to step in. What is the next move? Because it almost seems like there has to be. I mean, and these are the things that I'm thinking of as an investor. The Bank of Canada is working around the clock right now on how it is planning on getting out of this mess. Meanwhile, I'm working 25/7 to come up with jokes about daylight savings time. So let's look at ground level, shall we? NowToronto.com had an article called, and this is really looking at what the profession, the real estate professionals are saying is going on, just to kind of keep our finger on the pulse day to day. Real estate agent says that a Scarborough bungalow listed for $2.2 million does not indicate a bubble. Okay. Here's what they say. A Scarborough bungalow is listed at $2.2 million, which is double the record-breaking average price of a GTA real estate market home. But the selling agent says the price is not evidence that Canadians are sitting on a housing bubble. Here's what he says. Here's a quote. I'm on the front lines, and I see two families moving into a house like this. I see people buying a house and renting out the basement for $2,000. I see a lot of gifted money. I've seen parents put $500,000 in their kids' pocket for the down payment. There's a lot of money out there. There's a lot of equity. Here's what he says. In other words, it's all good, guys. It's all good. There's a lot of money out there. I guess so. True. But I think we should really be looking at all angles. That's my perspective. I love looking at both. When times are rough, aka COVID, I'm going to say, you know what? There's a light at the end of the tunnel. But when it's this bright, we really got to kind of, you know, we got to be a little careful. That's my thinking on it anyways. Make your own decision. Invest your dollars accordingly. The Globe and Mail, this is talking to Robin Pope, broker at Pope Real Estate Limited, says he cautions the sellers who hear about condos selling with multiple offers still have to be careful about their expectation. Quote, I also think there are some sellers who are losing their minds and really pushing it on price. There's this chase, this bidding war. We're going to talk about bidding wars shortly. And even when we look at the 905 versus the 416, listen to this stat coming out of Ryerson University Center for Urban Research and Land Development. Almost 2 out of 3 of the residential sales in the GTA on the MLS of CREA took place in the 905 area code in 2020, while the more central 416 area code remained relatively flat. So listen to this. That 65% share of GTA sales marks a 25-year high for the 905. There's no question the 905 is getting the heavy lifting. They're doing the heavy lifting when it comes to changes, the number of listings, the number of sales, and the increasing of prices. What comes next? Well, let's look at an article like this. Better Dwelling had an article called Canadian Real Estate Prices Have Synchronized, meaning bubble risk just soared. I don't know if I buy into this whole argument, but entertain ourselves. Let's go. Why not? Montreal is the next Manhattan. Or maybe Winnipeg. Sorry, it's definitely St. John's. Wait, what's happening? This is them describing the market, right? This is what you get when you get into reading news articles. Real estate prices are rising pretty much across the country. Canadian real estate prices are showing the highest level of price synchronization in years. This is when, this is how they describe it, markets, regardless of location, begin to show similar levels of price growth. Asset price synchronization, they say, typically indicates market participants have become irrational. That's not just a problem because high prices impact affordability. It means all markets are more likely to be vulnerable to a single shock factor. It's like putting all of your mortgages, they say, in one basket. I don't know. I do think, though, our country is desperately sick. I mean, the people are sick. The real estate market is sick. Even our clocks have COVID. Get it? Because their hands are on their face. Moving on. The more synchronized markets are, the more likely people are disregarding rational behavior, they say. If that's the conclusion, then maybe we got a problem. Markets may have common factors, but they're all unique. For example, a high demand housing market shouldn't rise with a market that's losing people. Pretty much what they're saying is you're breaking the rules, the fundamentals. Inflow migration, people coming, right? Development. There should be certain areas that are developing quicker and have more opportunities. But when everybody is rising in a synchronized fashion, that's where they say we've got some irrationality happening. Canadian real estate markets were the most synchronized since the Great Recession. If you've spoken to a Canadian, you've probably realized they all think they live in the next hot market. I mean, that's kind of true. Even the markets with negative population growth and fleeing young people. Interesting. Now, Toronto is an outlier in this entire equation, which is kind of funny. Removing Toronto from the index highlights how much of an outlier the region is. But all that to say, if there's any case for synchronization, maybe there's a case for a bubble. I'm not saying that this is the end verdict here. I'm just saying we got to consider all things. But when we talk to real estate agents, when we talk to organizations, you know, TREB, or in this case, REMAX, we're going to get it from a slightly different angle. Is there a bias? Absolutely. Here's what they say. An executive from the Canadian real estate giant REMAX says, we should disregard the bubble talk and pay attention instead to what he calls a, quote, housing affordability crisis. Now, housing affordability is an issue. That's not to be, but I do think when it comes to bubble, the term bubble, I guess, has some legs to it, right? Like it's really irrational, or this, you buy a property 3 months later, all of a sudden it's worth an extra $100,000. Thank you very much. What did you do there? Like these should call into question, like, where are the fundamentals? And when I think of bubbles, though, I think it's very hard to quantify. I think that there's not a problem with saying the word, is there? I don't know. But here's what they say. REMAX doesn't like the word housing bubble. He says housing bubble. I prefer the term affordable crisis. The demand level is at an all-time high and inventory is very low. I don't see how we're going to be able to keep up with the demand with population levels expected to rise to new heights. This is true. That was Christopher Alexander from REMAX. So how does REMAX, if not in a bubble, see prices stabilizing? Maybe this is our counterpoint. REMAX predicts that balance will be restored on the market to a degree when homeowners feel more confident listing their homes in a post-COVID-19 world. Maybe. We're going to talk about what's been going on over the last week, and you can decide, is it that or is it a prick that's knocking out a bubble that is almost inevitable at this point? So I want to get into our next topic here. We're going to talk about this. What signs do we have of a potential shift in the market? I believe as a Christian, we need to be vigilant and know the times we are living in. Luke 21:26 says, men will faint from fear and anxiety over what is coming upon the earth, for the powers of the heavens will be shaken. So to protect my family, I finally watched a webinar on watches and clocks. It was about time. John Pasalas had a Twitter post, a tweet. In 1 year, the GTA's house prices to rent ratio has gone from 25 to 31. No kidding. In 2020, the average home cost 25 times the average annual rent. Now it's 31 times. Fun fact. BlogTO. Nearly 80% of houses sold in Toronto last month went for over asking. That's incredible, by the way. New data from February shows it's become so competitive in and around the city that people are happy to pay more than the asking price in more cases than not in order to secure a home. 79% bought a townhome, detached, or semi-detached home over asking last month, February. A huge jump from 50% that sold over asking in December. So this is a rapid short-term change as well. Now, when we jump over to the condo space, condos aren't as hot, but still pretty hot. I mean, they spiked the number of sales 52% last month compared to February, and the number of over asking was just shy of half at 48%. So even the condos are hyper competitive right now and getting very quickly worse and worse. NationalObserver.com talked to economist Kevin Carmichael. You want to go extreme? Let's start here. This article is called Canada's Housing Market is on Fire and Headed for Disaster. Now, I want to be clear here. Just because I'm saying it on this podcast doesn't mean I agree with everything being said in this podcast. And especially when it comes to times like this where people are extremely overly extreme. Here's what he says. I think it's important that we look at it though. No? If for no other reason to be entertained. Quote, an exuberant housing market will continue to be a magnet for capital and entrepreneurial energy that would be better deployed in more productive industries. Thousands of entirely rational decisions could unwittingly erode Canada's competitiveness, saying we don't need to just invest in residential. Let's invest in things that are going to actually grow our GDP and create value for the rest of the world. But one of the things that's kind of lingering in this article is the idea of politics, political influence. And we're not in the middle of an election right now, so maybe we're ignoring it, but it has major consequences. Listen to this. While the Liberal government Ottawa may introduce some pro-affordability measures in its forthcoming budget, it won't want to risk upsetting homeowners in advance of a widely expected election. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure if we're going to have an election this year or not. Depending on the chances of that will dictate what comes out of the spring budget. But let's leave it here for now. Let's follow what he's saying and say there's a possibility of an election. Okay. They say if those Liberals win a majority of seats, as most of the recent polls predict, they should use their new mandate to do something bold. Tax the massive capital gains accruing in many people's homes. Your home. Oh, you thought, oh, that's the investors. Wait a minute. My home? That's the suggestion. So the question is, what does government have up their sleeve, especially if we give them a majority government? Well, this is what they say. As it stands, those gains are exempt from taxation, the primary residence exemption, and it can theoretically be claimed multiple times as we move from property to property. But by establishing a lifetime ceiling on capital gains exemptions for primary residents, say he said arbitrarily $250,000, the federal government could throw a splash of much needed cold water on an overheated housing market and capture some of the excess gains it has created. So let's tax investors because, I mean, let's face it, they're all terrible anyways. And then let's tax those who invest in larger markets because they're greedy and they're making too much money and we need to cool these markets for the sake of affordability. Tax the rich, if we were really to summarize it. Here's a conversation I found very interesting between Ron Butler and John Pasalis on Twitter. Ron said, is the cap gains exemption or primary residence an untouchable item in Canadian politics? Which I, for a while, have kind of think yes, but hearing this conversation makes me wonder. He says this, the kiss of death to the government who tries to remove it, we may find out. Well, here's what John said. I don't think the capital gains exemption or primary residence is untouchable. If the Trudeau government does consider this, it would be on high-end homes and or capital gains above a certain amount. Same stuff we're talking about. This would allow them to market to as a, quote, luxury tax versus a tax on the middle class. Because, you know, the middle class is never going to exceed $250,000 in primary residence gains. My goodness. Anyways, apparently, on my end, I need to be careful not to assume the government won't touch primary residence exemptions. It's all up for grabs. I could end up eating my words. Guess we'll just have to watch. Like, watch with our eyes, not eat our watch. Because that's too time-consuming. Ugh. Then again, it might taste good. Why else go for seconds? Anyways, could the Bank of Canada's hand, though, be forced? Because we might be saying the Bank of Canada, they're not flinching. They're going to sit for a while. But is there a world where they don't really have a choice? BNN Bloomberg article, RBC CEO McKay sees inflation prompting rate hikes next year. Royal Bank's executive officer Dave McKay says inflationary pressures will force central banks to start raising interest rates as soon as next year. Why? Why would that be a thought? Well, here's what they say. Large amounts of liquidity on consumers' balance sheets in Canada's estimated, by the way, at $212 billion. Wow. Combined with vaccines and new stimulus programs will lead to strong economic growth in the second half of 2021. Okay. Quote, therefore, when you look at input prices, commodities, labor, goods and services, we see inflationary pressure building earlier than later. We're not waiting until 2003. They say it could actually be in 2022. This is according to this dude. But everybody's got their hands up in the air. And even if the central bank says we're not going to raise rates for years and years, inflation could force that and could force their hand. Price appreciation pushed by multiple offers. I want to have this conversation because a lot of you guys are probably out there and experiencing multiple offers for better or worse. If you're moving from one property to another, it's not a whole lot of fun. I mean, even knowing I can sell my property, the fact that I got to go into multiple offers, I mean, this is what's pushing prices, no? But what happens if multiple offers stop working? That's right. They might not work. John Pasalis, good point. Ask anyone in this business, pricing a property low is no guarantee that a home will get multiple offers. When the market is balanced, you could be priced 10% below market and still get no offers. This strategy only works when demand significantly exceeds supply. And this is where I want to talk about, we might be seeing early signs of this changing even now. I highly doubt you're hearing this anywhere else, but that's why you're listening to me. Because I have no problem saying if there is something that seems to be changing, I want to know and I want to at least kind of, you know, investigate it further. And I think you guys as savvy investors do too. So let's look at what's happened over the last week. Here we go. Looking at weekly sold over asking in the 416 condos, we see it still rising. In fact, it bumped up from our 49% fund up to 51%, slightly over half. However, when we look in the freehold space, over asking is leveling off, but it's actually potentially trending back downwards. Listen to this. 30%, I'm looking at 30% was over asking. This is like what percent it went over asking, not if it's going over asking, but it bumped up to as much as 30% at a time over asking, and it's come back down 27%. This is in the 416. So this is nowhere going to hit news until there's kind of some kind of trend playing out, but this is the first week I'm starting to notice, wait a minute, maybe this isn't going to just keep rising and rising. In fact, Good news for buyers, according to Scott Ingram. If you look at the 416 active listings for this week, it's up 11.7%. I'll say that again. Active listings, not new listings, active listings are up 11.7%. That is the largest jump since the week after Labor Day. Condos are up slightly 1.5%. Not anything amazing, but all that to say, we see an increase in the number of active listings. So if the conversation from REMAX is, what's going to change is that sellers are going to become more comfortable with selling their home, and therefore it's not a bubble. We're going to ease back into it. I mean, if we start to see a steady increase in number of active listings, maybe there's no need to fear a bubble after all. I don't know. What happens, though, when listings rise and everyone is priced for multiple offers? Because in an environment where 70% of offers are going over asking, you know how everybody's pricing their homes. In fact, we see the asking price dropping as the sale price increases. But in an environment where all of a sudden we get an influx of listings, all pricing their home below asking, what happens? Well, you start to get lowball offers. Why not try? Let's try for that asking price. And you could see short-term dips in price. We'll see. To me, timing is everything. So I'm going to be watching this trend very closely. Make sure you hit that like, subscribe if you want to as well. Boss is like, you're an hour late. And the guy who invented daylight savings is like, haven't you heard? All right. Guys, if you guys believe we should have an open bid auction process instead of multiple offers, please hit that like button. Show your support. But we're going to get into some hot topics. Here we go. Financial Post. Article's called Rising Mortgage Rates Yet to Put a Dent in Exuberant Housing Market as Policymakers Take Note. So on this conversation, yes, interest rates aren't rising, but we do see fixed mortgage rates rising. We see that. In fact, fixed rates have climbed by about 40 basis points or 0.4% since the start of the year. Interesting. This is according to RateHub.ca. And there's actually more increases expected to match a 50 to 60 basis point move in bond yields. We kind of forewarned you guys, rates are going to start to come up. We're still seeing that. And there is probably more increase to come. Nothing too crazy. I mean, it's not going to change the whole market, these slight bumps, but definitely noteworthy. And I'm not complaining about living during a time with record low rates, man. It's the best time ever. Well, technically 6:30 is the best time, hands down. But on this conversation, if rates do start to go up, maybe we've seen the bottom. Maybe that's it. Maybe from now on, it's upwards from here. And maybe you're thinking, I've got a really big mortgage, you know, like I'm paying over 3-4%. And I just want to refinance. You know, I want to get my fixed rate. I want to lock it in. But you're going to kill me with this IRD, interest rate differential. For any of you who are savvy, we've talked about this on the show before, of even realtors getting caught up in this entire mess. There can be very large fees with this IRD. And I thought this is maybe my last opportunity to teach you guys on how to kind of bypass that IRD. Now, I'm not going to say this is financial advice. It's something that I came across in the last couple of weeks. I thought, wow, very, very interesting. We're going to call it Martin's Mortgage Maneuver. There's a link down below if you want to see how it all pans out. But the concept of the IRD is compared to the current interest rate for that amount of period of time. So if you get a 5-year fixed mortgage for the first 6 months, you're compared against the 5-year rate, probably not going to pay any fee. But as soon as that 6 month hits, immediately you're comparing against a 4-year rate, which is a lot higher, and it comes with larger fees. The longer you go, the higher the potential that IRD is an issue, especially in an environment where interest rates have dropped. Interesting. Okay, so the whole point behind this is what he calls the blend and extend. Blend and extend. And the concept is pretty much this. And do your research, talk to your broker. You didn't hear it from me. But the idea here is let's break this thing up and let's add a component to our mortgage that is 5 years. So if we decide to break our mortgage, it will be compared against a 5-year fixed product instead of a 2 or 3 year interest rate that kills me with fees. And you could reduce your fees to break that mortgage by 90%. Crazy numbers. Check out the article if you want some more info on that. But I think it's a crazy, awesome maneuver that might actually help you guys. And hey, if it saves you $20,000, feel free to send some over to your homie. Here we go. Next hot topic. Canadian mortgage delinquencies fall in 26 cities. This is according to CMHC data. The majority of cities, 26 in total, saw the rate of delinquencies lower. Only 6 Canadian cities saw them go higher. Local to us was London up 30%, Brantford up 7%, and Kingston up 5.9%. The largest declines was actually in Kitchener at 45%, and the lowest rate of delinquencies is actually found mostly in Southern Ontario, and specifically Guelph was the country's lowest rate for Q4 2020, only 0.05% delinquency. Pretty good, pretty good. No wonder these markets are flying, though, right? I must say, I can't remember a time I lost my toupee while riding a motorcycle. It feels like it doesn't, like when I wrote it, it linked, but now it's just random. At least not right off the top of my head. That sounds, that really doesn't sound, it's supposed to be, anyways, moving on. We win some, we lose some. CBC.ca, Toronto woman's life savings in limbo as new owner of townhouse development refuses to honor agreements. Wait a minute. Pre-construction things, pre-construction builders aren't completing their projects? No, no. I mean, this is a level of risk that we should recognize always exists. And this article is focused specifically on Richmond Hill, an assignment sale, which is key, for, that was made in September 2016. So one of the guys that works in the office assigned it to one of the ladies that missed out on buying it. And so here's what she did. She paid the $20,000 deposit to replace his deposit, but then gave him an extra $80,000 as the assignment fee. Thank you very much. Well, what happens when it doesn't close? What happens to that assignment fee? Well, the lawyers are going to have to decide, and there is a very good chance that this chick could lose $80,000 to this assignment sale. We got to know the risks in pre-construction. They are not foolproof, but they could be your way into a market nonetheless. NationalPost.com, more of an update. The We Charity, remember that entire scandal that was going on earlier, I guess mid last year? Well, apparently they're still sitting on $40 million in Toronto real estate that was supposed to be sold for an endowment fund. Yeah, well, that didn't happen. Let's wait and see. CP24 says, Ontario's COVID-19 science table says the province will need to enact a third lockdown, even harsher than what was enacted because of the B117 variant. Can we just call it the UK variant? I guess that's too racist. That's racist. Anyways, as we reopen, I think it's fantastic. I don't know about you guys. I'm so excited to get the heck out of my house sometimes. But who knows? Who knows? I mean, we got to be monitoring this, and what impact will that have on real estate? We'll be here to tell you as it's taking place. Which brings me to our last and final topic. Is the work from home trend way overplayed? And I want to talk about the psychological toll right now of the work from home issues. There are issues people are having. We're all getting a little loco, unless that's just me. We're all just trying to balance things out a bit, right? Even Peeping Tom decided to spend more time at home. He's trying to maintain a proper lurk-wife balance. And that was a home run. I mean, like, that's what I live for right there, guys. TheGlobeAndMail.com, working from home is causing breakdowns. Ignoring the problem and blaming the pandemic is no longer an option. I think it's important when we're having this discussion on whether people are going to move back into the city or work from home is here to stay, that we discuss the psychological, the mental health aspects of it. Is this not important? I think it is. Quote, people use the term pandemic fatigue, but that underestimates what we're going through. People are at the point of emotional exhaustion. Nearly a year into physical separation from bosses, probably colleges too, clients, sometimes coupled with kids trapped at home, white collar professionals. Yes, even those overprivileged white-collar professionals are cracking. Often top performers who tend to push through the pain are those who are struggling the most. A recent Morneau Chappelle survey found that 40% of managers in finance and professional services have considered leaving their jobs since the pandemic started. Isn't working from home supposed to make it that much better and something we would want forever? Well, almost half think that it's enough of a reason to leave. Wow. So why are white-collar workers hitting the wall? Here's some of the things they say. Several factors are at play, often boiled down to no clear separation between work and home life. Welcome to being a small business owner. For some, it's because there's no commute. For others, it can be because they're bored and therefore turn to work for stimulation. Businesses can also be busier than before, but have hiring freezes have forced existing employees to shoulder more work. complicating matters, working from home has made it much harder for people to tell if they're taking on too much or not enough compared with their coworkers. Such a good point. Never really thought of that, right? Like, I don't know what the people, what they're doing. So I'm going to work and make sure I'm the top producer, but there's no scale. There's no way for me to know. Very interesting. And also, vacations have plummeted, with many people delaying taking times off in hopes of using it when there's some semblance of normal life. The number of hours employees spend away from work on vacation fell more than 20% last year to a nearly 40-year low, according to Statistics Canada. So interesting. So interesting. And I mean, when we talk from work from home, I think it's important we recognize these things because it's not all just roses. It's not. Work from home pushing prices higher outside of Toronto. Listen to this article from BlogTO. The highest average home price in the GTA isn't actually in Toronto. You might actually know that, but if you didn't, now you know. King, an hour north of TO in nearby York region, where the price of a home, listen to this, $2.11 million as of February. With so many people opting to leave Toronto to seek out more space and cheaper prices during the pandemic and work from home era, there are clearly some communities that may want to avoid if you're looking for a deal. So maybe the deals are in the city. And again, this whole conversation of work from home is totally up to you on what you think comes next. But they say it also means you could find some extremely affordable homes as well, at least for now. And we see a lot of people going further than they even thought in order to capture those prices. Then we wonder why young folks like myself, I guess I got a house, but some young folks can't afford a home. And then people look down and see, our response to that is, if I had a dollar for every time a 40-year-old told me my generation sucks, I could afford a house in an economy they ruined. And it's so true. It's so true. Canada's construction investment may be pausing to see if work from home sticks. So this conversation brings us to, well, where are people going to invest in industry? Are they going to do it in the downtown core? Are they going to do it outside? Well, what we're seeing is a bit of a pause. We see a lot of development in the residential space, a lot of confidence, and those numbers are extremely high. I mean, residential construction now accounts for 72.3% of the month's dollar volume or value. But the slowdown may be indicative of developers taking a wait-and-see approach to the post-pandemic world. When it comes to developing other things, maybe the slowdown is simply not knowing where to build. What comes next? And I think a lot of people have the analysis paralysis in their going on right now in their business. Here is our last and final article. The Globe and Mail, condo buyers looking for more space and builders are finding ways to provide it. The work from home, the need for space is making its way into the city. Listen to what these developers are doing. In some cases, if the floor plan doesn't have enough space or features they want, they're increasingly open to combining more than one unit to make a new space. Interesting. This is talking to VP and CEO of condo developer Candorel. One buyer combined four units into one. Two gobbled up three units each, and a last buyer wanted to combine two units. They say it's virtually impossible to combine units after construction is complete. So the time to make a condo bigger is when it's still in the planning phases. And so this conversation is happening with builders. They're making these massive 800 square foot houses. They say $1 million condominium apartment might not seem affordable, but if trends we're seeing in the Toronto market continue, then it might be a steal. I love the speculation that takes place in the pre-construction space. But anyways, I'm going to toss a question out to you guys as we wrap up here. Do you think that work from home is permanent? Because even the big guys aren't really sure. Maybe we can have that conversation down in the comments below. Please, please, please subscribe to our channel. Hit that like button and let your boss know that you're still pretending to work from home. Don't worry. You don't need to send the corporate executives to my place. I hope you guys enjoy the extra hour of sunlight, my friends. And personally, I don't get the reason behind switching to daylight savings time in Canada. I guess I'm still in the dark. I'll see you guys next time. Take care and keep it real. We'll be right back.